Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of the week that we bring you some of the messages that you've sent in over the past few cycles of the show. Let's see, Rob, should I start off with this one about crabs?
Oh, please do.
Okay, this is from Nick. Nick says, I'm catching up on some of the Stuff to Blow Your Mind backlogged episodes, and I just finished your second episode about crabs and food. My brain, connecting crabs and food. Why not cookie dough crab? This is a little confusing, but he makes sense of it. Nick says, a few months ago, this picture of a sponge crab came across my feed, and it took me the better part of the morning to determine if it was a crab that looked like cookie dough or if someone made a cookie that looked like a crab. Either way, delicious. Regards, Nick. Nick, I would be really impressed if this was actually cookie dough. This does look like a real decapod crustacean to me, but I see exactly what you're saying because you're dead on. The texture covering this animal looks exactly like raw cookie dough, and I can't tell because I don't know what species this is. This is just an image from the internet. It does look real, not faked, but I can't tell if this is like an animal with wet sand stuck to it or if this is just what the carapace of this crab species looks like.
Well, then, and there are also a number of different types of sponge crab, I'm to understand.
Right.
But I do remember when this was making the rounds initially, I think one of the things that jumped out to me the most is that the crab essentially looks like the ginger dead man from the 2005 Full Moon picture starring Gary Busey.
That is a very unfair comparison to make to this beautiful arthropod. But yeah, I want to know more. Is this sand or is it not sand? Could it really be that the crab's shell looks like that? Has that kind of wet, granular, cracked appearance? It seems too perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I think they have like a spongy looking shell, but we haven't covered them on the show before. We've covered a number of different types of crabs, so who knows? We'll have to come back with more crab content in the future. All right. Speaking of other organisms that we have covered on the show, here's a bit of listener mail from Sarah. The subject, Ditch Witch. Sarah is, of course, responding to our episodes on the tumbleweed. Hi, guys. I recently listened to your episode about the tumbleweed, or Ditch Witch. I found the information about the possible origin of some of the plants commonly known as tumbleweeds very interesting. I am descended from and live in an area of Kansas settled by Volga Germans, or Germans from Russia, who immigrated to the Great Plains in the late 1800s due to its similarities to the Russian steppes. There are also communities of Volga Germans in South Dakota. I find the theory about the Russian thistle seed being unintentionally introduced by contaminated grain plausible. I know that many of these immigrants brought other plant seeds with them on purpose. For example, a berry of the nightshade family called Schwarzbeeren, commonly called blackberries. This berry is not well known outside of Volga German communities, but I have fond memories of picking buckets of them in my grandparents' backyard and eating delicious pies and kuchens made by the family. In performing genealogical research, I have found that this berry is also found in Volga German communities in South Dakota and elsewhere. The Russian thistle and other tumbleweeds are very well known here in my rural area. High winds and tumbleweeds are common, but about a month ago we had a windstorm that was out of season and had winds up to almost 100 miles per hour in some places. Many areas lost power due to the winds, and anything not held down disappeared from yards and lots. The day after the storm, I had to travel for work, and it was incredible how many tumbleweeds were caught in the miles and miles of barbed wire fences. It sounds hyperbolic, but they were so thickly pushed into the fences and piled so high on top of one another that you could not see through the fences. Being used to running over the occasional tumbleweed on the highway, I can't imagine what it would have been like to drive through the windstorm. Anyway, thanks for always providing such a great show, and keep up the great work. Sincerely, Sarah.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. Well, but now I want to know, are the Schwarzbeeren, so you say they're not well known outside of these communities, so that makes me think they're different than other blackberries. They're just a different fruit also called blackberries. I don't know if you know anything about Schwarzbeeren, Rob.
I do not. This one is a new one on me, but just a quick search on the subject seems to back up the claim here.
Oh, okay. I just looked them up. Yeah, they look more like, kind of more like blueberries.
Yeah. If I saw them, I might be afraid to eat them because they don't look like the blueberries I'm used to eating, but they look edible in the dangerous way to me. Like it looks like I could eat them, so I probably should not. But unless, of course, someone said these are safe to eat, you may eat them. And then I would say, yes, okay, I will have some.
Well, actually, I'm going to say that this is a fruit that appears to have thoroughly confused Google image search, because if you do a Google image search for it, you get results that are clearly blueberries and results that are clearly the commonly known blackberries, and then also these other things that look sort of like blueberries.
Well, I just ran across a whole page about them on recipes from a German grandma on online, so that seems to check out.
Well, isn't that nice?
I'm not. Who are you going to doubt somebody's German grandma on this?
Nope, I would never doubt your berries. All right, I'm going to read this next message from Owen, also about tumbleweeds. Owen says, "Hey guys, I loved the first episode on tumbleweeds and oddly enough, am super excited to hear more. I live in Utah, and although tumbleweeds don't seem especially common here, I did have a sort of wonderful moment with one last year. I live in a valley, and my house sits right up against the mountainside atop a series of mild hills overlooking the main part of a city. Anyways, I was walking up the road to my house on a blustery winter day when I saw a tumbleweed ambling toward me. I don't know why, but I couldn't take my eyes off it. Maybe it was that unpredictable bouncing, but it was, as you mentioned, almost like an animal. I watched it as if it were a fox moving toward me, then slowly away. I watched it until it turned a bend and was out of sight. I spent the rest of the walk home in awe. They may be a problem, but they are certainly a natural beauty in my eyes. On a more comedic note, there's a scene in the movie The Ridiculous Six where Adam Sandler sort of transforms into a tumbleweed in order to sneak past a group of men. Certainly bizarre, but I loved it. Here's a link to the clip. I went and watched this clip. All the best with whatever movies you like, but I have to note that he's making the infamous Adam Sandler noises while he rolls in tumbleweed form. So he's, Abby Doobie and all the way past the guards.
He does look like he just... I'm watching the clip now on mute, and so I'm not getting to hear this wonderful sound you're describing, but he does appear to transform magically into a tumbleweed.
Yes.
And then Owen Wilson's brother is there to watch him, so...
How would you describe the Adam Sandler vocalization? It's like angry baby.
Yeah, there is kind of an intentionally juvenile kind of silliness to the voice. I guess it's one of those things that that kind of took on a life of its own. Like, I don't know if he could stop doing it if he wanted to, right?
Right. Yeah. Now he just is the Adam Sandler noise, and his body belongs to it.
Yeah, yeah. Though, I mean, credit to Adam Sandler. He was really good in that movie, Uncut Gems, a couple of years back.
Oh, man, that was a good one.
Yeah, depressing. Not a feel-good movie, but he was quite good in it.
Not a comedy. It had some funny parts, though.
Yeah.
But I agree. Very good in that. But I got to say, also, Owen includes another movie reference. I haven't seen either of these movies. So the first one is that Adam Sandler movie. The second is the latest SpongeBob movie. He says it was oddly funny, but he says there's a scene that's oddly funny where Keanu Reeves is a tumbleweed that gives advice, though it seems to be implied that he's made out of sagebrush. And I found one link of this scene that's one of those looped for 10 hours videos. I don't know why somebody did that, but they did.
Well, this is actually very well executed. I'm not current on my SpongeBob, so I was just expecting the standard animated format, but this is computer generated and with a real life Keanu Reeves inside of this kind of beautiful tumbleweed looking structure. Very well executed.
Though I got to be honest, I don't know if this is a good thing to loop for 10 hours. Something that's a 10-hour loop has to have a certain inherent loopiness to it. Like the 10-hour Hypnotoad, I think, is my ideal. It's the platonic form of the 10-hour loop video.
I mean, I guess at this point, you just probably create a lot of 10-hour videos of just about everything and just throw them on the wall and see what sticks, see what takes off.
Ooh, I just thought of one. I don't know if it exists. You know what would be good? It would be a 10-hour loop of... Nedry in Jurassic Park going, you didn't say the magic word,
I mean, I'd be surprised if it doesn't exist already.
Anyway, thanks for getting in touch, Owen. Rob, you want to do the next one?
All right, what do we have? It's a duck episode. It's a duck email. No, it's a tumbleweed one. It's titled Duck, a Tumbleweed. This is from Meg. Meg writes, as asked, a New Mexico voice, but maybe not with answers to your questions. As a transplant from Cleveland, I loved your opening discussion about driving and the tumbleweed onslaught dilemma. Do I hit the big one or the bigger one? I still recall moving here and seeing my first real tumbleweed roll in front of me and having the holy crap, it's real moment. And it has never left. I regularly pause class to point out one rolling by the window and recall odd moments in lacrosse coaching when I had to pause practice till the tumbleweeds rolled across the field. Spring is crazy windy in Albuquerque. If you're ever passing through again at Christmas time, right near the Big Eye where I-40 and I-25 cross, there is a huge tumbleweed snowman. Huh. Ooh. Okay. I think I'd seen stuff online about tumbleweed snowman. I don't think I saw one when I was there, but I was in this area. Anyway, Meg continues. Another thought, roadrunners, another Southwest thing that still makes me stop and pause. Watching them hunt in my front yard is so cool. You really cannot but see microraptors stalking their prey. They have. I have had many a clever girl moments as one slowly approaches me, cocks its head, looks at me, clicks, and runs away. I know it's thinking, if only it was bigger, it could attack. If you haven't done a podcast on the continuation of avian dinos into birds, that would be cool.
Oh, thanks, Meg. I don't know if that's ever been the subject by itself of a podcast, but it comes up all the time.
But roadrunners or the fact that birds are
dinosaurs, that like they are the dinosaurs that did not die out at the KPG extinction.
I sadly only have one verified roadrunner sighting to my credit. And it was one of these situations where I saw it and then I described it to someone and I was like, was that a roadrunner? And they're like, oh yeah, yeah, that was probably a roadrunner. So I didn't really get to appreciate it in the moment so much.
The real clue is when it paints a tunnel opening on a cliff face and then you run into it.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably what was the confusing thing about it is they don't really look like the cartoon Roadrunner.
Yeah.
They look more like dinosaurs. And I guess the one I saw, it seemed to look like scraggier than the ones I see in pictures. I don't know. Maybe it had just had a run in with a dynamite laden coyote or something. Mm.
I know what you, and well, I guess Meg was saying the same thing. I know what Meg and you are saying about them looking like dinosaurs, though. Folks, if you've never seen a Roadrunner, look one up. They look like an illustration from one of the more current dinosaur books. Yeah.
Speaking of avian dinosaurs, my mind turns back to our previous discussions on the basilisk, which in some incarnations, in artistic representations, they look like avian dinosaurs. You know, or they look more. They end up looking more like chickens, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, the second season of The Witcher, which we finished. It has some basilisks show up in the final episode, and they really brought them to life in an interesting way. They essentially look like big dinosaurs without looking too much like dinosaurs. Very cool feathered monsters.
I know. For some reason, I see my future. I'm breaking down on this. At some point, Rachel and I are going to end up watching this Witcher show. And or we, you know, like I said, like actually watching it instead of just like briefly glancing at the first episode.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's it's The Witcher. So you know, you got to go into a certain expectations. But I don't know. I've gotten into it. It's got some good magic, some good monsters, and ultimately, I think it does some good character stuff.
You know, I hate to be the person who has a weird plausibility nitpick with a show that's full of fantasy and magic anyway. Mm-hmm. The one thing that always gets me about The Witcher, this was there in the video games too, is dude, he carries his long sword in a thing on his back. You know, your arm isn't long enough to pull it out of a scabbard on your back. That's why people keep the scabbard on their side. I mean, like just imagine trying to do that yourself. Like the blade is too long. It's longer than your arm is. So you can't actually get it out of the holster if it's on your back.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do find myself pausing at times and thinking about that sort of, it kind of has like a guitar case on his back that has swords in it, which seems to imply not like a quick draw situation, but more of like, I'm a professional. I have now arrived at the scene. I will now prepare my weapons and kind of go in. I don't know.
Oh, well, that makes sense. I'm thinking about, I guess maybe it's different in the show. In the games, he just wears them like a person would wear, you know, like he can draw them quickly from the scabbard, but they're on the back. I don't know why that drives me crazy.
I don't know. I'd have to rewatch some of the episodes to really weigh in on that. I don't remember exactly how he pulls out his swords, but once he does, he just really slings them around.
Maybe that's magic too. He has a magic scabbard.
Anyway, cool basilisks. I recommend the basilisks. Yes.
Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing them. Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential, and then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own? Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, well, I think maybe we should jump ahead to a response we got to our Weird House Cinema episode on Jack Frost, a.k.a. Morozko, the Russian fairy tale Christmas time movie. And this was a message we got from Natalia. It was a really excellent letter, though it was very long, so I had to edit it down a good bit. Are you ready, Rob?
I'm ready. Let's do it. This is a great email. I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah. So I'll summarize a bit at the beginning. Natalia starts off by saying some very nice things about the show, and she introduces herself as Natalia from a city in Russia called Kazan. I've seen it pronounced both ways. But anyway, she gives some personal background, saying that she has the Russian equivalent of a PhD in biology and once worked in bio research, but then later in life got interested in English, which she now teaches professionally. And she says she's been listening to the show for a while, but finally had to write in after our episode on this very familiar movie, because she says she's 50 years old now and grew up watching Morozko at least once every year. Apparently, our episode gave her the idea to use Russian movies dubbed into English in her English classes. And if I understand right, it sounds like she's saying that she developed a multimedia lesson in her classes involving a dubbed version of Morozko and our Weird House Cinema episode on it, which she says was a hit with her students ages 16 to 32. And if that is true, that is so nice to hear.
That is.
But from here, I'll just go into the text of the email where she shares some Russian cultural insights on questions that we had about the movie. There were some things where we were like, I don't know if this is like a historical Russian thing or if this is just a weird thing about this movie on its own.
Yeah, like, is this something isolated to a folktale, or is this something that is indicative of a larger reality in Russian culture?
Yeah. So, Natalia writes, as a gesture of appreciation, I'd like to make some comments. Not sure you'll find them useful, but you wondered in the episode, and this is the least I can do. First of all, regarding hair. Now, as a bit of explanation, you remember there is a lot of attention paid to hair and braids in Morozko. For example, the wicked stepmother is often threatening some kind of violence to Nastya's braid. So, like, she'll threaten to cut off her braid as some kind of dire warning.
Yeah, or especially the stepsister really wants Mama to cut off that braid. Off her braid, Mama. But, you know, she's like, well, what will I pull her by then?
Right, to cut off the stepsister's braid.
Right, yes, cut off the stepsister's braid. It's too beautiful.
So Natalia writes, the tradition of particular respect to hair goes back to pagan times. Our ancestors believed that one who held your hair held your destiny in their hands. That's why cut or combed out hair was never, ever thrown away. Hair was thought to be a source of wisdom and strength, and hairstyle was very informative both in men and women. I read that Russian warriors used to shave their heads, leaving a single strand on the top, which they braided. Supposedly, pulling that braid, a Slavic god Svarog either took the luckiest sons of his from the battlefield or transported the deceased heroes to the other side, although in most pictures, warriors simply have long hair. And then she goes on to explain some of the traditions about what you were supposed to do with your hair in these older times. She says that girls started growing hair approaching their teenage years. Girls should always wear their hair in a single braid. If a young maid was engaged, she changed the way of weaving a ribbon into her braid. Married women wore two braids, a symbol of two-ness, and covered the hair completely, for showing your hair in public was a dreadful shame and nearly a deadly sin. Spinsters were not allowed to have two braids, no matter the age. Widows cut their hair. By and large, the hair and braid was not only the sign of physical health, but the main asset of a bride, and a groom had to pay for it a separate charge to the family. Losing a braid was a real disaster and shame, and the girl or woman had to stay at home until it grew back. Cutting off the braid was one of the severest punishments.
Hmm.
And this is interesting. I mean, a lot of this kind of reminds me of traditions that we talked about. You remember, Rob, in our episode on nail trimmings, we got into that History of Religions paper by Bruce Lincoln, the religion scholar, about lots of different traditions from widely disparate religions about how you're like all this special care taken to properly dispose of cuttings from people's hair and their fingernails or toenails. And that there were a number of different explanations for these traditions, but Lincoln's idea was that it went back to the creation myth of the Proto-Indo-European religion that had something to do with a person being killed and then their body turning into the earth, so that the vegetation of the earth was the growing of this dead body's hair. And thus, like, in order to sort of live your life according to this sacred myth, you had to take special care about what happened to your hair, because in a way it was a symbol of the fertility of the earth itself and the crops.
Hmm. Yeah. That was a fun episode. You're getting into also the like fingernail ships and all of myth.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good one. But of course, she doesn't just share information about braids. She also gets into the sleeping arrangements in the movie, which we had some questions about, and this was very insightful as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So Natalia goes on. She says, "You were absolutely right about Marfushka's bed." Remember, Marfushka is the mean stepsister who sleeps in this weird thing that looks like a crib. And we were like, did people actually have beds like that? Or is that the saying, like, she's just a spoiled baby or something?
Mm-hmm.
So Natalia says, "You were absolutely right about Marfushka's bed. It is a fictional feature, I would say, put in the scene exactly to emphasize her overindulged attitude. Teens did not sleep in cribs. In fact, you probably noticed that Marfushka's mother also has some fancy wooden bed with a carved headboard, whilst her husband sleeps on the, quote, Russian stove. Those are also signs of the family hierarchy and privileges. But in general, a long time ago, kids and elderly people in Russian villages slept either on the back of the Russian stove or on the huge shelves high up under the ceiling, usually adjacent to the stove, called, I'm not sure I'm saying this right, but I think poletti, I guess in English transliteration, P-O-L-A-T-I. She says those were the warmest places in a hut. And then she attaches an image that shows a more modern house that's sort of a recreation of the format of an old Russian hut that would have this big, I guess, stone or earthenware stove that would probably get warm and stay warm throughout the night. And then right next to that, there's like a bunk for sleeping that's up near where the ceiling is.
Yeah, now this is interesting. I remember when we did, I guess this was the invention episode we did on beds at one point, we talked about some similar approaches to sleeping arrangements that you encountered in Chinese culture.
Yeah.
Certainly in the, I think maybe more in the northern climates. I don't recall offhand. But yeah, this idea of like a bed stove, which ultimately makes a lot of sense when you're, especially when you're imagining in a more traditional living environment where you have this stove, this engine, this place of heat that you've invested resources into. Of course you want to sleep next to that or on top of that if possible. So that's interesting. And I love this picture that she included of the Russian hut, the traditional Russian hut situation with the Russian stove.
Yeah, yeah, this is really interesting. So I would say everything about the sleeping arrangements in the movie then is realistic, except for the fact that Marfushka is in a crib. I think that's just because like she's like weird and messed up.
Yeah.
And then finally, Natalia says, "It can't be helped. I'm going to recommend you yet another couple of Russian movies. One of them stars Inna Churikova, whom you're familiar with already." Inna Churikova was the actress who plays Marfushka. Natalia says, "Both movies were directed by the tremendously successful and very popular film director Mark Zakharov. The movies are The Very Same Munchausen and The House That Swift Built. I thought you might like them, although I'm not sure if they're dubbed copies." And then she provides a couple of links. In the end, she wraps up by saying, "I wish you nothing but the best. Fondest regards, Natalia." Thank you so much for this excellent letter. I am so happy to hear our episodes have been useful in teaching English. So it's funny, that's not the first time we've had somebody say that. At least one other person has written in before saying they were using our episodes in English as a foreign language classes, and that always gives me a slight chill because I'm wondering what bad language habits of mine I'm accidentally passing on.
Right. No, I feel the same way. I want to say it was somebody teaching English as a foreign language in part of China. I could be mistaken on that.
Yeah, we did hear that at least once.
And certainly, thanks for the movie recommendations. We're always always delighted to discover and explore new motion pictures, just in general, but also for Weird House. I know that we have at least a couple, probably more than a couple, of Russian films on the to watch list. Mm-hmm. I know there's a horror film in there, and then various science fiction features.
Yeah, yeah, but I guess the list of Russian films is getting larger because we'll have to add these two to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, anytime there's a shot at a Munchausen film, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and close the mailbag for today, but certainly go ahead, write into us. Let us know if you have any thoughts, feedback, expertise to share regarding anything we've covered on the show, core episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind. There are listener mail episodes, our artifact episodes on Wednesdays, or of course our Weird House Cinemas. All of it is fair game. Write in and we will read what you have to say. You can get all those episodes, by the way, in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed, which you'll find anywhere you get your podcasts.
That's right. Big thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today. Health Aid kombucha.
are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.